Hello.
There I am.
Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared for a little bit. Trump Report, Dr. Frank Danbury. We've got to play a little bit of a Trump speech here, Trump, and then we might be afraid. We'll find out. Here we go. Trump at the United Nations.
The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about. That's what the United Nations is for. Let's see how they do. It is time for North Korea
burden, United Nations.
To realize that the denuclearization is its only acceptable future.
Okay, what the heck is that?
Is what?
That bird. You got a bird?
I do, but your audio is a bit off. I could not hear that
Mr. Secretary
all, so
General.
You're getting the bird, but I
Mr.
Can't
President.
Hear, I couldn't hear your
world
audio.
Leaders.
All right, well, he was yeah, we were listening delegates. To the bird. You know, that, you know.
Yeah, you're a bird.
Okay. Amongst all that bird chirping, what the hell was he talking about that we were supposed to pay attention to other than the bird?
All right. Well, basically.
Get your butt in the studio.
Yeah. So basically, that was the introduction. I think that was the Trump at United Nations. And that was pretty much what Trump wound up doing that set off the apocalypse, according to CNN. So anyway, welcome to the Trump Report. I'm sure you guys know that Trump's done a couple things this week. One, which is, of course, possibly winning his reelection and the midterms. And I know Ernie's having a meltdown that he didn't have a chance to vote for Trump and joining the celebration that we're all having today for the success of Donald Trump going forward. Well, anyway, with that aside and poking at Ernie, it's been an amazing day for Donald Trump as far as, you know, as far as a victory lap. And we're seeing the politics in action in many ways, and one of which is the reaction of the mainstream media and also the Democrats and even the establishment of the Republicans all now trying to get in on the action of Donald Trump's accomplishment. You know, he wound up doing this meeting. No one thought he can do it. That clip from the UN proved that Trump had no idea how to do diplomacy. If you remember, they added that to the list of things that Trump, that think that the apocalypse when Trump won. You know, they said that when he got in, he would make the leader of the KKK probably vice president. They also said that Trump would not win. The night of his election, they said that the Dow was going to drop. We would have an economic depression throughout the world. Seriously, you remember that if Trump won. And lastly, of course, that we were going to have a war with North Korea because of the rhetoric that he was showing, including what he did there at the UN. Every single one of them has failed remarkably and been the opposite. No surprise to me, but it's a surprise again to the media. And that has been a real shocker. The media does not know how to turn this in any way. So the way they're turning it now, it seems to be, is, all right, well, Trump kind of lucked out. He's having this meeting. But we all want in, okay? And just like you talk about, Ernie, the establishment does not want to be left out. They couldn't ever rope in North Korea. Trump does the first overture, and now they're all going, oh, wait. You know, how about me? Lindsey Graham, you've got that guy, I think his name is King, Representative King. I think he might be a Republican, but they're all now chiming in how they all want a seat at the table for the negotiation and that Congress has to be included. And the Democrats are all saying this, coming from a party where Barack Obama didn't bother asking anybody when he signed his Iran deals.
Well,
Where to start?
Yeah,
right?
You're a cheerleader, man. I mean, come on.
I feel like a cheerleader today.
All right. So Trump comes out with a end of the war agreement between North and South, and he'll do a victory lap on that. And you know, where's my Nobel? And you know, there's forces that don't want it. And then he selects John Bolton to a cabinet position to go over and do it. And I'm like, what the hell was that about? So with Mathis and him out there trying to keep it going, are they playing a game? Is it part of Trump's game? Is it?
Yeah,
like
well, no, it is. It is.
With oh, Bolton trust the plan. It's QAnon, Frank.
No. I think that's kind of what it is. The art of the deal, man. You're going to read the book. He's playing good cop, bad cop. And Trump does a good job acting at first as if he's the bad cop, you know, with rhetoric like Rocket Man. But then he puts in people like Bolton, who are the real bad cops. So he's sitting there with Bolton. The North Koreans despise Bolton. And so Trump's like, all right, you know, I'll keep my bulldog off you guys. Let's you and I just negotiate. So I think he's playing the middle by having Bolton play the bad cop on this.
Okay, but Bolton's even there. I see him at the G7 or, you know, I don't know if he's a Bilderberger guy or whatever, but he certainly was at the G7. Did he fly to Singapore with Trump?
Bolton? Oh, yeah, he was sitting right next to him.
Why? Yeah, I'm. You know, and what's his position anyway? I forgot. National security or something. What's his?
I'm not positive. Something like
don't
that.
Care. Yeah. Don't care. Yeah. Whatever.
I know. It's just some glorified
shiny badge. Shiny badge.
Yeah,
shiny
badge. But you're asking about his play, and that's what I think it is. One other quick point. I don't know if just tell me when we're getting the break. But you know,
yeah,
I've been including in the very beginning is that I know what you think. I'm just I'm basically a cheerleader for it, and that I can't see, of course, the problems. To me, keep in mind, it's not always what he does. It's the fact that the establishment is losing control over that. I know you see it, that Trump is the same thing as the establishment. It's just the new establishment, so it doesn't matter. It's someone else to rule you. I certainly understand that point from your perspective. But so much of what my enthusiasm is everything he's doing is the person that represents, I know, maybe not you, Ernie, and I'm not saying he represents me in every area, like, you know, going after marijuana and other issues. But he was put in there by the people when the media and the establishment, both sides, said it's not going to happen, including, not to rub it in any way, but including yourself. When we have big arguments saying basically that there's no way the establishment will allow Trump to get in there, and he still was able to squeak in.
Oh.
You know, the people still have a voice enough. And now, whether Bolton is there or not or whatever, the fact that the establishment now all is clamoring to keep our military bases, that's why they're angry, because Trump is already promising, possibly, that we're going to stop the military runs with South Korea as one of the main overtures for our own inspectors to get into North Korea. Got to keep in mind, do you think Donald Trump is ever going to allow the same Obama and international inspectors that supposedly inspect Iran and every other country that they have to give the middle finger to us? He's never going to allow that little dog and pony show. Trump's going to want, you know, his own inspectors. He'll probably, heck, we have Dennis Rodman as like the negotiator. He'll probably put like KISS, you know, like Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. Those guys will be the inspectors. You know, like KISS meets the Phantom.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Give them a Geiger counter and just, you know,
exactly.
Drop them in.
I trust them.
You know, when you said, oh, or Ernie said, and you'd never come, and you go back to the Trump report, you're confusing me with someone that gave a crap, okay?
Yeah, I know.
That thought there was a difference. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know. My thing is, I am surprised that he's been able to accomplish as much as he has, and it definitely would not have happened had it not been for popular support. We saw that with, you know, Ron Paul and the Levolution, that the people kept him up on that podium. They did not want him there. Well, populism has an impact, and Bilderberg just finished up. Got to get Luke Radowski on. Maybe I'll see him at some of these festivals this summer, but we hung out last month in Texas. But I tell you what, he was saying, Bilderberg, man, they tightened down the screws this time. Well, We'll see what were they planning. Don't know. Find out. Dr. Frank. From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation. A difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com. Yeah, dealing with APS, they came out and they go, man, you're using a bunch of power. So they're out there doing all weekend. They had some sensors on and kind of, and they found out there's a harmonic that's going on with the miners that are making about 40 amps of waste on their side. I'm not having to pay for it, but it's limiting my capacity. And I go, well, we need to filter of the kind of the something of what? And they're like, like engineering stuff. So I'm working on that. All right, here we go.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, there's two tickets to paradise going to Singapore, and it's Trump and Bolton. Yay. You know, is that where we're at? You know, we're gonna go threaten them into whatever. See, the one thing that they did, they do this South Korean and U.S. mock, we're gonna invade every year, scare the crap out of everybody of doing that. And that was the one thing I got from North Korea. All the people I've talked to on this and representing North Korea say, hey, man, if you just quit threatening all the time, and, you know, why are they threatening? What's the threat? They need to be there to threaten. I mean, I don't. And then, of course, they get a nuclear program and some missiles. And what do you think was going to happen? So and then they do that. Bolton does the Libya. We're going to Libya them. And I'm like, why would he even freaking say that? That was kind of here, give up your nuke so I can kill you. So why would he give up his nukes? What the hell is that about?
Well, who knows? Maybe it's Bolton and others secretly the establishment, and they're just trying to derail it. I don't know as far as with Bolton, but aside from the political overtones of trying to derail it, it's interesting, Ernie. It's so much what you talk about as just how blatant the establishment is, especially when they're getting cornered and they're starting to pop up. Because their main objection is to pull out the troops. Lindsey Graham is, of course, on his liberal MSM media circuit the last couple of days, you know, and they all do the begrudgingly, all right, yeah, President Trump did good, blah 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 blah. But we need to be involved in this. We should have a hand in this, and maybe we can make a couple of overtures. But if he's going to be pulling out the troops, there's no way in hell that can happen. Blah, blah. Well, that's the man. That's the establishment. That's the machine and the military industrial complex. and they will not have that. And just like you said, people you speak to, that is, you know, it's like the missiles in Turkey that we had facing right over the border at the USSR. And so what did Russia do? They went and it became friends with Fidel Castro and learned and, you know, led right into the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, we started that.
Oh, breaking news, breaking news. I don't know if you saw this. You look on Freedom's Phoenix. It might still be on the front page. We have a bunch of stuff. But the Chinese and the Russians built an enormous big dish array to keep track of all things in the air for United States of America. Cuba's got a big, giant radar installation now of something they're keeping an eyeball on. Boom. Done. Boom. Boom. Here it comes. Oh, we don't need a missile. We just need to know everything you're doing. Oh, and this thing probably transmitter goes, zap, and you EMP all your sally, and it's all done. You know, you guys want to play, because this war is going to be a cyber war. It's going to be, you know, I can feel it coming. And
yes.
So I don't, you know, this Korea, and it's all just much ado about crap. You know, it's just not the let. I think I wonder how much it blindsided the Trump administration when Kim Jong grandson came down and met with the South Korean guy, and they're all bromancing and everything. I mean, you think the Trump administration jumped in to get involved in that, or they have something to do with it, or?
Oh, it's all part of this. It's all part of this. I mean, look.
Well, I mean, directly or as a result of. I mean, it just kind of Trump goes, wait. You guys aren't allowed to do this without us. Damn it.
Well, you got to keep in mind. I mean, he's talking with South Korea. He's talking with China. This is the North Koreans, because he's boxed in. I mean, Kim Jong Un knows his days are numbered. This is self-preservation. I mean, Trump. Look, Trump did a fantastic job with his speeches. I've tried playing them on your show. Typically, when you're out of town, because I know you can't handle too much
without
Trump's
birds.
Ongoing time. Yeah. So I'll play the one from the United Nations. Where, of course, the media, all they played was the one clip when he said Rocket Man. But the rest of that speech was fantastic, telling the world that, you know, Trump's not against other countries. He's for America, as every other country leader should be in favor and supportive of their own country. Not the United Nations, but priority of your own country. It was a beautiful...
No, that speech, I remember that speech. He's going, yeah, we think you should be in charge of your own stuff. And that just went against this New World thing. And, man,
exactly.
They didn't like that none too much. Bilderberg just happened. What's the news from Bilderberger and all these guys on Trump? You get any? Are you paying attention to that at all?
I honestly haven't. I mean, there's so much. It was just a flurry the last 24 hours. And keep in mind, I mean, it was when everyone is in bed. North Korea was daytime, so they were having all their meetings. And I've been catching up the last
number of hours. All right, well, tell me everything you know that I don't know.
Right.
Go.
Okay, and then also North Korea. I'm sorry. Then he had a speech. In South Korea, remember Trump is the first president to go to South Korea, what, like 6 months ago? And he spoke there. So after the UN, and he kind of did that Rocket Man talk, but there was much more involved. He put down the gauntlet that is a new sheriff in town. I'm not screwing around. Then he turns around and he violates or basically just stops the Iran deal, which the establishment couldn't stand. But it shows that he's in control. Then he goes to South Korea, and then he gave a beautiful speech. Again, they never play this. His speech in Poland. Beautiful speech, but they don't. No one will play it.
Yeah, blah blah blah. Speeches don't mean squat to me.
No, it's him doing it.
No.
You say it doesn't matter. I'm talking about the process here. Remember, guys, and let me take a step back. Most of you long-term listeners know this. I went to college in Japan. I graduated from Kansai and blah blah blah. But I spent quite a bit of time in Asia. I've brought up the Asian element so many times on the show, which I know sounds kind of boring. It's Asia. Who cares? But that's the point. One third of this planet. Are Asians.
Oh, no.
Chinese are the majority.
No, that's good stuff.
They see stuff differently. And the Asians about saving face is a huge issue. For instance, the way Trump had his translator. Notice he had a very small, demure-looking Asian female. Well, Asian, but a female translator. That's on purpose. One of the big problems is having a male translator in a negotiation. If you're going to be doing hardcore business, you always want the male translator. But in this case, he's trying to play down and not seem as threatening to Kim Jong-un, because Kim Jong-un is nothing but just a small little kid. I mean, guys, it's funny. The media is making this out like, oh, my God, the two heavyweights. This is not heavyweights. This is Muhammad Ali, Trump, versus like some six-year-old. I mean, this plays
completely with China on his shoulder.
It's complete to his strengths. I mean, China. Donald Trump's 70-something years old, the world's best negotiator. I mean, let's just say he took on New York City and the establishment and media and everything. This guy knows how to negotiate better than anybody.
Okay, we'll submit your resume to Trump and Incorporated.
But he's up against up against this young 30-year-old that was just born into this, has no skills. Trump has completely the upper
hand. How old is he? How old is he? Is he 30?
He's like 32, 33, something like that. That's it.
Kim Young grandson.
I mean, it's not even a matchup, and I think he knows this going in. So saving face is a huge part.
Do you really think North Korea, it's just North Korea? There's not a China element involved here?
Of course there's a China element, and China wants to remain an element. That's one of the concerns they're having now. Because sometimes, and Trump said in a famous clip, he said, sometimes the enemies that everyone says are your enemies turn out to be the biggest pussycats. I mean, he said that in like years ago in many of his interviews, is that many times people are demonized by the establishment, whether it's the business establishment or now the political establishment. And so, like, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. And Kim Jong-un may have been boxed into this situation, and everyone calls him names and demonizes him. Dennis Rodman, we got to talk about him eventually. He's been like the negotiator. He's said that Kim Jong-un is just a kid. He's like just a kid who just wants to explore and have fun, and he can't. He's locked. It's like he's locked in his own country, and he can't do anything. So Trump is Mr. Party Man.
You know, this Dennis Smith Rodman thing, it was like, he's going to go, he's not going to go. He is going to go, he's not going to go. He is going to go. Did he go?
He wore potcoin.com.
Score! Score! If I'd known that, I should have went bought some. Yeah. Oh, more. Dr. Frank. Okay, what do you want to go on when we come back?
Hey, Ernie, pull up a clip of Dennis Rodman being interviewed by CNN regarding North Korea. You got to come back with it. It's awesome.
All right.
You'll love it.
Okay, go down.
Y'all over. And he's wearing a MAGA hat.
Dennis Rodman interviewed by what?
CNN North Korea. Should come right up. Or put Dennis Rodman cries. That'll come up. That'll be a shorter clip.
Okay, I got Dennis Rodman. All right.
Put cries. Yeah. I'm telling you, this is... First, I'll admit to you here. I know you're being recorded. Me, I probably drank a little too much Kool-Aid last night. I admit it.
Oh, you're
Kool-Aid. But I'm enjoying it.
All right, let me see.
Well, you teed up the relevance of Dennis Rodman. We have him joining us on the show.
All right.
All right. Well, we'll do this one and see what's up. And all right, I'll come back with this. You know, we'll see what's up.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
Performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's Agorist Hosting.
Yeah, keep your bird shut up, all right? Here we go. Because it's on
if
the same channel.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Well, you teed up the relevance of Dennis Rodman. We have him joining us on the show. He made his way to Singapore. There he is right now. Good to see you again, my friend. Dennis, can you hear me?
I'm too tired. How are you doing, guys?
It's good. Do you have, what does your hat say?
What's my hat say?
Oh, good. Now I can see it.
Let's so you make have America a make... great again.
All right.
You got it right there? You got it?
I got it. Thank you. So you made your way to Singapore. How important is this to you? You talked a lot about the prospects for peace when we spoke several years ago. Did you think this moment would ever come?
Well, in my heart and soul, when I first went to North Korea, I was very honored to even be selected to go there. And once I went to North Korea, I was didn't really understand what the old situation was as far as being over there. And when I first met Kim Jong-un, I was... more like, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know what he represented. I didn't know if he was somewhere important. But I knew something was going on. But once I got familiar with the culture and the situation over there, I got really used to being there. I thought it was felt like I was at home.
Now, you know both men. You've spent time with the North Korean leader. You've spent time with Donald Trump. How do you think the two men size up in terms of how they might get along?
Well, I think the fact that Donald Trump would understand the fact that North Korean, the people of North Korean, have a heart, they have soul, charisma, and they love each other. And I think the fact that Kim Jong-un and his family understands that, I think that President Trump should understand the fact that the reason why the marshal of North Korea respects Dennis Rodman, the fact that he trusts me. And I gave him something for his birthday, and I thought I couldn't pull this off. And I said to him on his the day before his birthday, I said, I'm going to give you a present. And he said, what is that? I said, I'm going to bring a basketball team, a professional basketball team to you. He said, can you do that? I said, yes, I can. Even though I knew I couldn't do it, I said, if I fail now, it's going to be a problem. So basically, I got a lot of people together. I got Popcorn here helping me out, my sponsor. Thanks to those guys. And it happened. And Kim Jong-un came to me and said, Dennis, you know what? This is the first time someone's ever kept their word to me and my country. And I looked at him, I almost got emotional. I said, wait a minute, hold on. He said, someone's never kept their word to you and your country? He said, yes, this is the first time someone's ever suggested that. And I came through, and I think that he really appreciated that, the fact that he's not normally hearing someone that's trustworthy. And I think that country is normally hearing people that's always lying, deceitful, and not trustworthy. And I think that if Trump goes in there with a great heart, with his heart on the table, and let Kim Jong-un see him, really emotional as far as like speaking to him. It ain't got to be about war. It ain't got to be about hatred or what happened in the future or in the past. The past. We'll move on to the future. And I've told people about Kim Jong-un. He's all about the 21st century. He's trying to progress his country. And Donald Trump is going to do a great job is try to reach out and make sure that our hands, Americans, our hands are always open, because as Americans, we have let so many people around the world join us to be happy in one country, that's the United States. And now we have really put ourselves on the line to reach out to North Korea, and they've been so gracious to me, my family, and the United States. So let's make this happen. If Trump could pull this off, more power to him.
Dennis, did Kim reach out to you, or any of his people reach out to you, the president's people, anybody reach out to you for insight into the other side?
Well, you know what? I've talked to those guys the last 5 years.
Which guys?
And we talked to, I talked to Kim Jong-un and an administration over there 5 years ago. And he asked me 5 years ago, we sat down for lunch. And he sat down and asked me, hey, Dennis, I would like to ask you three things. If you go back to tell the President of the United States these three things, and I would be willing to talk to him. And it's a true story, and I got my people here that was there that heard the conversation. He said things like, if they can move the ships back from South Korea, I would do what I have to do to listen. If you can move certain things or do certain things, I will listen. My ears will be open. And I tried to do that to Obama, and Obama didn't even give me the time of day. I asked him, I said, I have something to say from North Korea. He just brushed me off. But that didn't deter me. I still kept going back. I kept going back. I showed my loyalty and my trustworthy to this country. And I said to everybody, I said, the door will open.
I remember you saying it. Let me ask you something.
Amazing.
Does Kim understand English, Dennis?
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. Okay. When I said those damn things, when I went back home, I got so many death threats. I was sitting there protecting everything. And I believed in North Korea. And when I went home, I couldn't even go home. I had to hide out for 30 days. I couldn't even go home. But I kept my head up high, brother. I knew things were going to change. I knew it. I was the only one. I never had no one to hear me. I didn't know how to see me. But I took those bullets. I took all that. I took everything. Everyone came at me. And I'm still standing. And today is a great day for everybody. Singapore, Tokyo, China, everything. It's a great day.
It is a great
day.
Okay, that's all right. We got Dennis Rodman crying. Cool. All right. Now, obviously, your bird doesn't like Trump or CNN, okay? So, what up with that?
Well, first of all, that was not my bird. That was when I'm standing outside, so you don't hear a crying baby. That's the bird outside.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Not my bird. Anyway, I'm inside. So the thing is, the reason I was playing that, and by the way, I can't hear any of the audio that you're playing, so I just remembered the clip, I think. But there's so many overtones to that to unpack in a sense. First off, is you've got a representation from Trump through Dennis Rodman.
I'm
so happy on CNN,
you were saying,
right? Which is Chris Cuomo, who's the arch nemesis of the administration. Then you have, keep in mind, a black man coming out again, completely in favor of Donald Trump. He's wearing the MAGA hat. We just saw this a few weeks ago with Kanye West. Then we have Kim Kardashian. I mean, this is a real feather in the cap of the masses, so to speak, as far as at least the anti-establishment crowd. And now they're starting to lose control over black people and minorities that they want stuck on the plantation themselves for the establishment. So
well, when Dennis Rodman first started going, I mean, one, Dennis Rodman was more earlier generation. I mean, he retired probably a decade ago or something. And but man, he was a very controversial, out there, freaking always in the news, doing crazy kind of, and tatted up. That boy got every tattoo. I mean, they made, big giant Carl Jr. tattoo Dennis Rodman thing. I mean, it is, and him to go to North Korea, I thought that was interesting. Now, Kim Jong-un, I just call him grandson because you got the dad, then the grandfather, yes, then his dad, and then him.
Kim 3.
Now, he was educated in France or something. I mean, he has a Western education. Does he speak English?
I believe he does. There's no way he would not, but he doesn't seem to speak it in public either, because he's trying to hold on to the North Korean pride, or it's just not that fluent yet.
Okay, so Dennis Rodman, of all, it shows anybody can be a diplomat. I mean, just go not be a jerk and keep your word. And that's one thing that he was talking about. He's going, look, nobody's ever kept their word to us. Now, we're constantly being lied to. You're the only one that ever kept, Donald Trump and friends need to get a bunch of tattoos or something. Okay. So, and then you're right. This racial thing is just not working out when you got Kanye West saying, go watch Century of the Self and you'll see how much you're being screwed. Have you watched that yet?
No, it's actually, I meant to do it last week. I'm going to watch it this week.
No, got it. You see that and you'll go, oh, I get it. You'll see, what's really going on. But the, this meeting in Singapore, is it end all be all here? Is there going to be a peace treaty between North and South and U.S.? Does there have to be? Do we have hopes?
There doesn't have to be. Keep in mind, too, Kim Jong-un and Trump are both controversial, just like Kanye West, just like Dennis Rodman, just like Pamela Anderson. That's what this is. But basically, both of them are hated by the community, but they're both becoming celebrities through this meeting. So both of them are really hearkening on the pomp and circumstances and the positive median spin. I think they're going to keep this going. I mean, why have part one? We'll have part two, part three. We'll have another meeting at the White House.
Healing our world,
and have this dance all the way into midterms.
I don't like... All right, this is a perfect example. You have the Iran hostage crisis that was going on at the end, that held through half of the Carter administration. You get they wanted to hold off the deal. They wanted to hold off the release. They wanted to hold off until Reagan took office on Inauguration Day. Then they're starting. I mean, is he going to hold off? They go, wait. We don't want to have a peace treaty today. We need it in right. See, when's the election of the primary?
Exactly.
August 20th. I mean, are they going to set their watch to have the maximum impact on midterm elections? And I'm not digging that either.
Well, I agree, but keep in mind that he's, this is now a whole other race that I was mentioning before, which is now Congress wants in. I mean, the Democrats definitely, because they've been left out of this whole party. I mean, Trump did this entire thing on his own. There was no other, Grant, they had some negotiators through himself, but being that Trump has been fighting everybody, he doesn't trust anybody in this administration basically the swamp. He can't trust anybody. So I think he's been playing this close to the chest. I mean, after all, he uses people like his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in order to try to talk to other leaders. He's probably spoken to Dennis. I'll bet you Dennis
Are you
Rodman's
kidding me? His best diplomat is freaking
Dennis Rodman. That's Dennis Rodman. I was saying
blonde
before.
Blonde babe daughter. Always got to have blonde babe daughter.
Well, look, Kim Jong-un, I can't stress enough. The guy is just some young kid who hasn't been around. Look, guys, when I was in, let me tell you a quick little story. I was in Hong Kong in 1997. I was there with my friend. I do a lot of international traveling. I was there the day that China came in and took control of Hong Kong. Mm. Okay, I saw Prince Charles, you know, cry when he left. He was waving to the Union Jack being lowered. Okay, I was there seeing it, and it was fascinating because that day the Chinese troops came in to take the city. You know, like we're in charge now, right? And the funny thing is, the Chinese soldiers were from mainland China. They had never been to a capitalistic country like Hong Kong. And they're all bussed in to start walking around with guns and all this. And it was funny to watch because they were, like, in Disneyland. They were, like, walking around with these guns. And they're looking around at the skyscrapers. And they're talking. Their mouths are aghast. I mean, I watched this happen. And the business people, the Hong Kong people, didn't even give a crap. They were just walking around with their briefcases and like, you know, all right, soldiers, don't get in my way of making money. And it was fascinating to see how secluded and sequestered the Chinese were and not seeing the outside world. Well, Kim Jong-un has been born in this. He's got a silver spoon, but a silver spoon in a country that has nothing because, you know, fascism, socialism, this kind of things don't work. And the dictators, I mean, as far as an economy, he's been sequestered behind his own country.
Yeah, but now he goes to Singapore and he sees all of, but he's been educated. I mean, he's been exposed to this stuff before. Heck, he was trained to take over.
No, he has, but barely. I mean, remember, probably when he was younger. And before he was in control to do whatever he wants. I don't know if you saw, but when Kim Jong-un landed, okay, he got there, he was in Singapore for a little bit, right? And then it was like 10 o'clock at night. And out of the blue, he decides to do a tour of the town, which was not on the schedule at all. I mean, everything was closed, but he had never really been to a large city like that as an adult, having all of the command of whatever he wanted to do. And so he just got in the car with all of his security, his entourage. And he's just going around town, just checking out the lights and checking out the, you know, the fun districts. That's what he did the night before his meeting. You'd think he'd be sleeping and brushing up on English.
Where's
something.
This brothel thing you guys keep talking about?
Exactly. He reminded me. I was telling my better half it. His look when he walked out. It was
okay.
Yeah,
describe
it.
We're good, coming back on. You can describe it.
All right.
Here we go.
Rhodes. It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
China Grove from the Doobie Brothers. Doobie. Well, that gives us an opportunity to talk about Potcoin.com, which Dennis Rodman's pimping on his shirt. And you go to, you know, Potcoin, and what does it say here? What does it say? Potcoin is an ultra-secure digital cryptocurrency network and banking solution for $100 billion global legal marijuana industry. Bypass those of the banking to screw you. So him doing that and going, man, there's got to be somebody going, damn it, we hate this freaking populism. God, we're not in control as much anymore of we're damn. Something's going to happen. And it's like Jim Rogers was saying, yeah, I'm for investing in North Korea. Are you kidding me? You know, it's just like where there's blood running in the streets. That's where you're going. We're going to buy up a whole bunch of Venezuela. So
no, it's very true. Look, guys, first I wanted to tell you that now we're back live. I admitted to Ernie, I probably drank a little too much Kool-Aid last night celebrating. I know I'm a little too much for some of the diehards that just obviously don't care for the man either way, and I understand. But to me, this is a win on so many different levels of beating the establishment. Remember, people like myself, Alex Jones, others, you know, those of us support Trump for a different reason. It's not just, you know, having someone else to control us as much as it's just a sucker punch to the establishment. And from what Ernie talks about, also is to expose the lies, how far this goes. Because you're seeing the reaction of the establishment now that Trump did what no one else could do. You're also dealing with Kim Jong-un, which is kind of like, it's like if we open up North Korea, it's one of the last countries on the planet that hasn't been dealt with, or should I say exploited, right? I mean, everyone wants in there.
Yeah, get on that almost, central bank.
It's been like this little tiny territory that hasn't been touched. And it's a gold mine to any country that can open it first and exploit it. And now you've got Kim Jong-un, who is this naive young guy who just wants to use his power and money to have some fun, and he can't do it in his own country. right? I mean, that's kind of what I think this is. And Donald Trump is like the epitome of pop culture and fun and strength and party time, and he hangs out with celebrities, and which I'm not saying Kim Jong-un watches our TV all day, but he certainly knows who Trump is with this. I think Trump knows this is such an easy win if you stop demonizing Kim Jong-un the way the establishment has done it and look at him as a human being, good or bad. And I know he's done a lot of bad things, but then again, the guy's had no controls. He's had no one to spank him. And Donald Trump is, you know, is basically probably the only person that has challenged him in a way where he has respect. And you know what that's like. And you have to earn respect. And you're not going to treat people well if you don't respect them. I believe he respects him. He watched how he handled with China. The Chinese people talked to Kim Jong-un privately and said, yeah, this guy's for real. They actually had lip readers reading, translating the two of them, the Chinese and North Korea, having conversations. And they were talking about Trump, basically saying, is this guy for real? And he brings Trump's
got which real? I have no idea.
Well, which real? But then he gives the middle finger to Canada the other day at the G7, which was that theatrics or not? Basically telling the world, I'm not going to be roped in anything. I'm Trump. I'm America. I'll do what the hell I want for the betterment of this country. So he's, whether it's orchestrated or the media wants to spin it that Trump's a loose cannon, has no idea what he's doing. All I know is TIT, trust in Trump. He is there for a reason. He's not an idiot. You know, he beat the entire establishment at their own game and now is meeting with North Korea because he sees it from different perspective, not simply how can we control this area and utilize them as a pawn in this international game of putting troops around the world in control. Trump's not looking at it that way. So I think this is going, and this is not a surprise. I thought last year when he said Rocket Man, I told my better half, I said I could see him meeting with Kim Jong-un before he ends his presidency. I should have bet Keith a dollar on that one. I really believe that, and it's fascinating to hear the media so surprised and shocked. They still can't figure out Trump. Like, they keep getting surprised, and they don't understand this is how he operates. And
you know, there's one thing that Dr. Frank did, you know, 3 years ago when he came and he said, man, don't be a hater, but I want to come on and do a Trump Report thing every week, and we'll do that, and it's been 3 years. I mean, like next month, it'll be 3 years. And I'm going, damn. Well, during this whole thing, you know, Frank's, you know, kind of covered it because he read Art of the Deal. This is how he does these things. Now, to what end? I'm going, yep, Trump got what he wanted. What did he want? I have no idea, but he's getting what he wanted. What does he want? He wants that Nobel Peace. Dennis Rodman should get the Nobel. Give it to him.
I'm being half serious with this, but Donald Trump wants a hotel casino with his name Trump in North Korea.
No! Score! That'd be good. You know, well, what's North Koreans on gambling? They probably are not big fans of that, but he would want at least a hotel or something. Trump.
Oh.
Hotel,
I'm
Trump.
Sure it's probably bad, you know, it's all...
No. I'd love to see a Trump, you know, hotel, maybe a casino, who cares, you know, whatever. You know, at least he'd have a hotel. So this is, that's another thing, the expansion of the Trump empire, you know, through his sons and daughters and so on, and later, this didn't go away. Oh, so Trump is probably going to run again in 2020. We got the 18 midterm elections. We'll see how that goes. Democrats are, you know, shooting themselves in the mouth because that's what they do. And then you have 2024. Is there talk of, Ivana? Is Ivanka? I keep mixing those up. Which one is the daughter?
Ivanka.
Okay. Ivanka is the daughter, and she's, they want to do that female thing. Well, there you go. Get us a blonde babe. We'll kick the crap out of, we got the beauty contest. We do a swimsuit edition, Trump style or something for president. But, you know, that's another thing. Culture, they're doing this, we've taken the social justice thing to the extreme of Trump was in charge of Miss America or Universe or whatever the heck it was. And now that's gone. Well, I'm wondering what his brand, what his support with this social justice warrior and how they're having a say when you got black Dennis Rodman and Kanye West in support of Trump and then him actually accomplishing stuff. It seems like this is all part of the plan. And I'm waiting for God, man, he better hurry up when they start doing the frog march of all the indictments of everybody going to jail, or is he using that as a negotiating thing for something else that he wants? What's the news on all that?
Okay, well, you can pull it up right now. Dennis Nunes, the representative who keeps the guy I talk about every week that you always say, you know, I just don't care, you know, ouch, quit it kind of thing. Well, he's the guy that's been constantly requesting, because supposedly he represents the people, and he keeps requesting from the Department of Justice all of these files, right? There's like a million.
Okay, I'm looking up Dennis Nunes, what?
And, well, Nunes, a deadline request. Just put it in for today for news. So today he's giving a deadline to, I think, the Department of Justice to turn over another set of papers. Remember, he requested all of them at one time, like over a year ago. And they keep giving us like one piece of paper a day, heavily redacted. I mean, this whole thing is what the Clintons, sociopaths, what the establishment wants to do, which is to just drip, drip, you know, delay, and outrun the clock. It's all this is outrunning the clock for the next election because they're trying to flip that Congress. That's why I'm so excited today, all right? Because that just completely backfired in their face. But Nunes is now with another demand for probably another set of
I don't want to waste time in a live show. We'll maybe do it after the break.
Sorry, all right, so let's pull it up. Basically, it's papers that they're asking regarding the FBI informant. Remember the FBI informant that has cancer, that's on his deathbed, who was there when all the money was transferred?
Yeah.
Well, those papers are supposedly coming out this week. The deadline is this Thursday. So this is a major component that's being overshadowed by the North Korea.
Okay, now what this is about real quick is there was an FBI informant that was part of helping Russian businesses do whatever, is kind of a lobbyist, grease the skids kind of guy, and they weren't paying him and shaking him down and pissed him off. He turned state's evidence and became an informant for the FBI. And then during that process on other cases, he saw Bill Clinton and the boys passing some money of doing whatever, and he's on his deathbed. What are you going to do to me? And I'm freaking, I want to sing and tell it all. And they're trying to keep that under wraps, certainly before, keep it after the midterm elections. There's a whole bunch of shoes to drop.
Yeah. Absolutely, and another pivotal part is going to come today or this week. I mean, granted, the media is going to keep trying to downplay it, but you keep wondering when this is going to come out. It's a drip, drip, and then a heavier drop, and I think it's being timed. Also, we're going to see this start to come out, like QAnon. I think it's good, whether he exists or not. It's going to start coming out before the midterms. Just watch.
Well, of course, but I mean, that's always the threat. And they're going, oh, wait, what do you want? What can we do? What are we going to? And then he'll negotiate. It's all about negotiation. And I'm going, art of the deal. You know, is he going to, or just screw him and just everything comes out and then we'll see where it lands? Or is he going to use that to negotiate for Merca, whatever the hell that is? See, we don't know. And I just know he's going to negotiate. I want negotiation. Just tell me everything. All right, there we go. All right, you want me to play this into the thing? I mean, you're not going to be able to hear it, but, you know, the Nunez.
Yeah, is that just a technical thing for today, or why am I not here?
No, because it's on the same Skype and the Skype computer so that I can put it into the thing
no problem.
On the same channel.
No. It's no problem. I just was making sure that you're aware of it. Okay, so just a couple other points regarding this. I wanted to touch back with the Asian connection there. I know you guys don't see it as much as I do. This is profound of how Trump is looked at in the Asian theater. Now, granted, our media would never cover it. If it was Barack Obama, they would be showing every day how the Asians just love Barack Obama, which they did not. But they love Trump. On your show, I've played clips, remember, from Japan and Japan media and South Korea and the Philippines. I mean, they love Trump. He's like a mini celebrity. He's almost like a
character. They don't. CNN says they don't.
Yeah, all right. I mean, Trump to them represents the individual in many ways. You got to keep in mind, in Asia, you know, it's they yearn to be an individual. They yearn for being your own identity. That's why they love and eat up, you know, Western culture. But their culture is all about the kind of like the collective. We often call them the Borg, you know, the Asians, and not necessarily always in a bad way. But they do think as like a hive mentality, but they yearn for that internal, that liberty that we all have to certain degrees. And so they live vicariously through Americans often. That's why Americans are like rock stars when they go over a lot. And they and a lot of the Japanese, they just want to pal around and get enamored with how Americans just have opinions and they just do whatever they want to do and they wear whatever they want to wear. This is such a foreign concept to them. So Donald Trump represents the ultimate in individuality, telling the entire system to screw off. Remember that in China, they made that rooster. Remember the Donald Trump rooster statue? Remember we put the hair thing?
It's a real rooster. It's a real rooster.
It was a rooster. It was a Trump rooster. They built like 20-foot tall Trump rooster in the brand new Chinese shopping mall. I mean, this wasn't to make fun. This was like, you know, it was. I mean, Trump's like a brand now around the world and especially in Asia. So there's so much to everything with Trump. There's like seven ways to discuss it. And that's why it probably sound convoluted on your show sometimes, because there's so many angles to it that people on this show, we are often looking at. You know, we're not looking at just the surface level, but how many angles. Asia is a major player, clearly, especially with the Chinese. But when I was living in Japan, you know, you start to read all of their newspapers and their little zeitgeist world, and they're very insular between, you know, between South Korea, the Philippines, Thailand. The only country that was a link to all of the news in Asia, strangely enough, is Australia and a little bit New Zealand, because that's the only Western type of country that is immediate in all the trading circles in that part of the world. So Australia and New Zealand actually have some real play in that part. But the Asians have their own world and how they look at things. Many of the concerns are, for instance, you know, how radicalized is China? Because China's invaded pretty much all of them in the past. So they also make a big deal about, they call the comfort women. That's a huge scandal that they refer to, almost like what we talk about, the racism and slavery in America. Well, one of their big black eyes is how the Chinese and or Japanese, mainly the Chinese, would use Japanese women as basically forced servitude to be women of comfort for all the Chinese soldiers, basically just raped over and over by the Chinese soldiers. And this is something where the Japanese women never talk about it. It's shameful. And many of them have died, suicide, and all kinds of problems. It's a real major topic in Asia that is very contentious amongst all the countries there. I know we don't see it that way. Most Americans don't even know about it. But there's a whole different world of how they see things. And Trump is just like this huge, you know, breath of fresh air of where the rest of Europe and the Western world is going. So anyway, you got to keep that part in mind as the representation for China and South Korea and all of that. And North Korea, Kim Jong-un, knows this because he's tied into all of that. So he's seeing Trump as not just the next American president like Obama or Bush. He sees him as a rock star, a way that all Asia sees him. And the fact that Kim Jong-un is able to have a sit-down meeting with him is astounding. Keep in mind that Kim Jong-un did not tell his people he was even meeting with Trump. This whole thing was secret to North Korea's people until last night. After he shook Trump's hand, then it was announced to the North Korean people that Kim Jong-un sitting down with the famous Trump, and they showed pictures and surprised his people. So there's a lot of theatrics going on his end. And for Trump, you know, being bashed by the establishment this entire time, and now he was able to pull this whole thing off without the establishment, and he doesn't want their opinions. He's like, I don't need your help all of a sudden. I opened the gate up, and now you all want a seat at this table. No, I'll call you if I need you. And that's going to be the next contentious issues you're going to see on the media.
Need you for what? The media?
No, well, the mainstream media is trying to tie this in that Trump did all of this, and now he's going to make negotiations without Democrats or, you know, Republicans.
See, that was another thing on the Randy. Okay, this is what he said. He goes, right. We do the North Korea or something. I don't know if he was talking about North Korea or Iran or whatever, but he was saying, we're going to go to Congress to do this so that it sticks, because that's why Obama couldn't get Congress to do whatever it is he wanted. So he just did it. And that made it easy for me to undo it. So I need it to something that's dead. So he's going to do it the right way or the way of something. I mean, you know.
No. You're completely right. That's what I was saying last hour, is that they're all bitching about this, that how dare Trump do this without coming to Congress, and yet Obama did it, and nobody cared, right? They thought he was a celebrity, and you're right. That's how Trump undid it, because it was not an official treaty, because Congress did not approve it. So you're correct. However, Donald Trump is using his rogue image and the Democrats' inability to really understand who this guy is. Like, I just bang my head. Like, how does, after a year and 2 years of this, they can't see this guy? But he's playing to that image that I don't need you. I'm going to do whatever I want. So the Democrats are like, well, you have to approve. You know, you have to get it approved by us, and we need to look at it, and blah blah. That is the art of the deal. He knows that he has to do it. He knows he wants to do it, so it's not wiped away by the next administration. But he's playing it up like, well, I don't have to. And they're having a cow about it.
You know, so I'm wondering, you know, when does Obamacare come into this thing? You know, at some point, you know, he's going to have to deal, because this is just, I mean, you're a doctor. You know how this is going, and the cost of $20,000 a year for a family of four to kind of be what?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is... And, you know, this whole country economically is going to face, you know, the music. And what do you see on that? How's that going to affect foreign policy? And are we going to ever pay the debt? Do we care anymore? Do we just inflate it away? I mean, he's got to deal with this stuff. He's been there screaming about how great and wonderful everything is. Not so much. And if you've been around here in Arizona, I know what to look for. I've been, you know, here for, God, you know, since I was 12. So like early 70s. And there's a cycle, and we're in that cycle again, to where you see the strip centers, retail, all the disposable income, everything's starting to ratchet down, fewer hours for even restaurant workers. I mean, you know, it's, and retail store closings going, you have strip centers half empty now in Phoenix, where they were full even 6 months ago. So I don't know what the hell they're whistling past a graveyard with.
Oh, Ernie, they absolutely are. And I took a slight chill pill just to get the Kool-Aid out of my system. You know, I'm just kind of draining it out a bit. I'll try and be more relaxed.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I admit it, man. Today's an interesting day. So as far as Obamacare and then with the economy, I see them, and you know this, but they're intimately linked. And here's why. Many people, you know, all the baby boomers, bunch of them, fewer of us to pay for them, they all decided to do their last hurrah, as you know, during the housing boom that Ron Paul and many certain libertarians and you know, Austrian schoolers warned us about how a bubble works. But nevertheless, they all got into this this bubble mania. They all bought homes they couldn't afford, and then they all went bust. Everyone in the station knows the story. But the thing is, they bought these homes thinking that they bought them at age 50 or 60. They'd ride it out for another 10 years. And of course, every year their house would double in value. At least, you know, the idiots were all thinking this as they saw it, you know, the bubble explode. And they're assuming that they would buy a home for $500,000. It would be worth $1 million or $2 million by the time they sold it. And then that would be their nest egg to take care of them. Well, now you've got, and this is, you know, before Obamacare even took effect. So now you have this broken medical system. It doesn't help you. You can't see your own doctor. In order to do what you want, you're normally having to go outside the system in many cases. And so now the baby boomers are all getting sick. They're starting to have health problems. They're turning 70, whatever. They can't afford their homes anymore. They can't go up the steps if the arthritis sets in. They can't be working around these giant McMansions that they all bought to have their last hurrah. So now you've got all these people getting sick. They need money for health care because the health care system's obviously broken. And then they go to sell their house. My father isn't a perfect example. Hopefully he's listening. Hi, Pop. But they're all having this problem where none of them want to sell their house at a loss because they keep thinking any day it's going to go up and there's a magical amount. Like, there's going to be another birth rate of like 40-year-olds and 30-year-olds out of the blue that are all going to come to America somehow, and we're going to buy this surplus of homes from the baby boomers. You're lucky to be able to sell right now, in my opinion, and even get some of your recoup costs back, because when this bubble really does go, like you said, whistling past the graveyard, and everyone starts cashing out to get money for health care, there's not enough buyers to buy this stuff.
Oh, it's going to get cheap. We're going to get us some.
Oh, my God. This is going to implode in just a spectacular way, but I'm glad you brought it up. The health care issue does play into the necessity of selling. You know, all these people own these homes that they can't afford, and they're underwater. Remember, these are not 30-year-olds that can ride this out. I mean, they all need the cash out now at the same time, and the economy cannot support it. I mean, 20 and 30 year olds are not even buying homes now. Heck, half of them are still in their mom's basement.
Tiny homes. Tiny homes out in the lone prairie of tiny homes, and you're not allowed. You're not allowed to camp in the forest.
Oh, all right. I don't know if I said this on your show. When I was in Seattle, I unfortunately, in the lobby, they have like USA Today and the Seattle Times, you know, this kind of crap. And on the front cover of USA Today, they had a mainstream story that said the new way of thinking about homes is that buying a home, owning a home, is selfish. That if you own a home, you know, you might think it's a sign of individuality, but it's really a sign of selfishness. Because, you know, when you own a home, all of the costs are elevated, right? I mean, it costs more to air condition. And, you know, if you're in a communal setting, or if you're in apartments or condos, it's much more green and you're not as selfish. That was the lead story, and I thought it was a joke. They're serious, but that's how they're twisting this again, that you don't even want to own a home. Why would you want to own a home? Besides, you can't afford it anyway. So these costs are going to crash. Obamacare is definitely going to crash. Trump is trying to out – basically, he's just waiting for that to go. And lastly, the Supreme Court, I think – was it the Supreme Court? Just ruled this past week – or was it Monday or last – on Friday – that another tenet of Obamacare is unconstitutional, the mandate, which I thought was already ruled on. But just pull it up, Ernie. They just had a ruling on this recently.
Okay, Supreme Court what?
Ruling Obamacare, put it for recent or news. It should have just dropped a few days ago.
All right.
So anyway, so it was another component I thought was already dealt with, but it's just another nail in the coffin that that this is done. The Republicans have to have an answer. They don't. It's interesting with John McCain, by the way. I make a comment to my patients. You know, Mr. War Hero, you know, when he gets brain cancer, for some reason, he's not standing in line for 3 months for the VA with the other true war heroes, so to speak. He of course, when Mr. McCain gets sick, he goes right to the Mayo Clinic. I'm just saying, you know, Mr. Thumbs down on the vote to repeal Obamacare. The hypocrisy is glaring, and I do bring it up in my office. A lot of my patients are kind of on the same boat, and I can't.
Well, I'm looking at this, and of course, this is from the Washington Post, so they spend whatever they want to do. But The main thing is that 20 conservative opposing states, you know, to Obamacare, led by Texas, have filed suit in federal court, blah, 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 arguing the entire law is invalid because the reason the court found it constitutional, its penalty for lacking health coverage, will go away in January under the tax overhaul passed by Congress. So they have been piecemealing it. See, Trump is. He's slick, man, because he knows that, you know, I do this one little thing here that'll give standing on this and the state and who can challenge and who has standing and who can go after it and what do we got to change and do. And I'll get the Democrats to do this one thing with I'll kiss their butt on this and everything, get this, and then boom, they're toast. I mean, you know, he thinks, you know, it's amazing how much has been prepped and done in a short a time. He's not even 2 years into this. So I can see that. This whole thing was such a mistake on so many levels, but all the more reason why him appointing Supreme Court justices has such a big deal with this. And, you know, Sotomayor and Ginsburg and all these guys, they're, you know, with their oxygen tanks and their, you know, breathing tubes and feeding tubes sitting up on the bench, and they don't want to go until they can get rid of them. They were promised, hold on, and we'll get another guy in there and appoint or whatever. They're not going to make it. You know, he's going to be appointing how many more justices, you think?
I believe there could be two more that he replaces. And Ginsburg is one of the first to go, but she's holding on for all means to get Trump out by the, you know, that they're trying to hopefully get him out sooner. I'm not sure. I'm not saying this is the only reason, but it's why there's such a push to flip Congress during these midterms.
God, why? Okay, the Democrats get majority, then what? They impeach?
Yeah.
Okay, so good. We get a trial in the Senate. Yeehaw, let's do it.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's front and center, and it's a way for them just to wear or run down the clock with molasses this time. It's not just running down the clock
with
resistance. Because he can't do anything.
Why would he be able to do anything? He'd keep doing whatever the hell he's doing. I would love to have the deep state on trial in the Senate with a full-blown impeachment of let's bring it all in. That'd be awesome.
No, I do too. I keep thinking, I keep hoping, or with my wet dream is to do a let's just expose everything. You know, Donald Trump says, all right, you guys think I'm colluded with the Russia. Let me show you everything. Here's because they have done that. Donald Trump Jr., they couldn't find 30 emails. They asked him where they were, and he goes, oh, here they are, 30 emails from that little meeting with the Fusion GPS. No big deal. Hillary Clinton, 33,000, and it's still gone. So I would say, look, fine, you want exposure, let's have it. I'll show mine, you show yours. Let's put it all on the table. That would be the way to flush them out very quick. I mean, they're not going to go for it, but it's a way to take the initiative on this case and be on the offensive side. Now, why Trump doesn't do it, or maybe he's waiting on that, I don't know. I'm sure Trump has enough skeletons in his closet as well. Remember, he never showed his taxes. By the way, this is just a quick aside, but it's interesting how many millionaires and billionaires on the liberal side, progressives, are all trying to jump into politics. You know, Mark Cuban, many others. They all seem to want in now. They saw what Trump did. I think one of the reasons that they're all jumping in is because they learned that they could now run and not have to show their taxes, because they can always go back and hearken to Trump and say, well, Trump never showed his taxes, so we don't. So if you have billionaires that don't have to show taxes now, that opens up a whole new segment.
Nah, that'd change more laws. Here in Arizona, we saw it keeps getting more and more and more. They want to know it, and screw you. Whatever. All right, this is Supreme Court thing. It says here, Trump sides with Texas, won't defend Obamacare in court. Who's got to defend Obamacare when you go to the federal court, the federal government? Trump goes, yeah, we're not going to defend it. So who's going to stand on the other side?
I don't know either.
The Justice Department is tasked with defending federal statutes, but in this instance, it agrees with the state that the individual mandate and other requirements should be deemed illegitimate as of January 1, 19. Since Congress repealed the penalty for not having insurance in its tax reform package last year, much of the rest of the insurance statute becomes unconstitutional in 19 and must be struck down. Attorneys for Justice Department said in a court filing Thursday, such provisions include protecting people with pre-existing medical conditions, blah, 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 blah. The legal motion is mostly symbolic, and any substantive action in the lawsuit will likely take months. In addition, the government doesn't go so far as Texas and fellow plaintiffs in arguing that the entire Affordable Care, yada, yada, yada. So I'm just going, all right, well, the Justice Department has said to the court, you know, we think it should be struck down. We're not going to defend it. Then what the hell is, is it a blank, seat over there? I mean, how does this, I think it's interesting, that they're going to, and Donna and I, just out of principle and poverty and screw them, how many years has it been? We just keep finding, didn't get it. What's the penalty? $100-something. What's the penalty now? It kept going up. Well, by now, it was going to be $1 billion. Well, they took that penalty away, so I never had to do it. So it's just like concealed carry. Get your permit. Right? Nope, I'm waiting until there isn't one. Oh, there isn't one, then I'm glad I didn't do it. So this is, if you wait long enough and you're on a principled side, it might come around your way. But Trump and healthcare, what's his solution? Allowing insurance to cross state lines, to allow everybody to kind of pool them, do what? I don't know. The solution is just get the government freaking out of it, But,
right.
What's his solution to this?
Well, I don't think he has a solution. I mean, his solution was to have the Republicans have a solution, because they've been running on that for, a decade, it seems like, right? We're going to repeal and replace Obamacare, just like John McCain was going to build the dang fence. But, I mean, this was an ongoing promise over and over. Donald Trump gets in. He says, all right, guys, I'm holding back the tidal wave, and I got you a justice on the Supreme Court. I got you the House, the Senate, and I'm sitting here with pen in hand. You just come up with something, and I'll sign it. And he did everything for them, and they couldn't pull it off for, all the reasons and the establishment trying to just to maim him. So, obviously there's politics and all involved with this, but that's his solution. He doesn't have, he's not the expert on it. He's not claiming to be the expert. I mean, the liberal media keeps, saying that Donald Trump has no right to even be talking about healthcare and have nothing to do with this whole discussion. because, you know, the guy eats hamburgers and are saying that he has no right to talk about it.
Oh,
I find it interesting because Barack Obama smokes cigarettes every day.
No, Alex, quit it. All right, let me read a couple of sentences here. No, this is kind of describes it.
To come up with it.
The department in the past, they were talking about the Justice Department, quote, the department, this is Sessions, the department in the past has declined to defend a statute in cases in which the president has concluded that the statute is unconstitutional and made manifest that it should not be defended, as is the case here, Sessions wrote. The department will not defend the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. But three attorneys for the government withdrew from the case just minutes before the Justice Department's filing in federal court in Fort Worth, Texas, which signaled an internal rift within the administration over its role in defending U.S. law, according to University of Michigan law professor Nicholas Bagley. While Justice Department attorneys often advocate for laws they may personally disagree with, these three civil servants instead decided to exit from the case, which Bagley described as almost unheard of. So I'm not really sure, you know, what this means when the state of Texas comes in and files. I guess automatically it gets served on some federal DOJ or something. And they go, okay, well, I guess we're the guys answering it. Well, then they pulled off of it. So now who's on the other side? I'm just, this is interesting. You know, we're going to see Obamacare just kind of go away. And what Trump saw is to take away the penalty. And that was what was in controversy before. Was it a fee or a tax? Well, then they said, you know, well, it's a tax. And I'm like, on a percentage of what? It didn't make any sense. And this was Roberts at the last minute, you know, got the manila envelope with his pictures of whatever the hell to get him to change or something. So I'm going, all right. Well, this whole thing is involuntary. We had a case here. That's a long story. Bottom line is this. 13th Amendment, involuntary servitude. In the congressional record, when they were talking about what that amendment meant, as defined by the people that put it in, was involuntary servitude included forcing individuals into third-party contracts. It's like there was, Jim Crow laws or whatever. They had, were freed black slaves. They were transporting cotton for the plantation guys working for the plantation owners. That's fine. But when they were freed and they were contracting, say, yep, I got wagon. I know I'd be hauling, you know, cotton, and I can do it, and I'll charge. They go, nope, can't do it. Got to have a $5,000, which might as well have been $1 billion, or 500, same thing, you know, bond that you had to do to be able to use the roadways. So this is where all this all this stuff, all the gun control, everything was about. We need to have controls from they, them, those of the sheriff department of you be black and you're not allowed to do it unless you got. Well, what happened is you had to contract. You had to were forced into a third party contract with a plantation owner that, you know, was waived because they had assets waived from having to do this bond. So what they did is in the involuntary servitude was that you were forcing people into a third-party contract so you weren't free. Well, that's what this, I'm going, oh, you're forcing me to go get insurance from a private company. You're like supporting that. What kind of involuntary are you making me go into a contract? We had the same case in my restaurant. They were forcing me into doing, and I claimed, man, I was being a big butthead about it. And this came up in the 90s because a retired roofer activist guy named Ricky Duncan found a judge that had died, and at a auction or garage sale or something, which he went to all these different auctions and sales, he had all of these cases in these nice three-ring binder leather binders that he bid to get the binders because he thought they were really nice binders. In there were the favorite cases of this judge and a lot of research on different things. Well, he actually read them. He's like, oh, this is cool. And he came across this argument. Involuntary servitude as the actual discussion in the Congress, you know, putting the 13th Amendment in and go be ratified and so on. It was for this you can't be forced into a third party contract. Nobody brings this stuff up. We're slaves. Then I'm watching, you know, I was rewatching Thor Ragnarok, okay? The Marvel movie Thor. And I hadn't watched it, but, you know, when it came out, that is a really good movie. It's a lot of fun. Well, in there, the Jeff Goldblum character they were, you know, there was a rebellion, a revolution going on in their planet, and his aide-de-camp, you know, she, you know, his head, you know, enforcement babe, she gets up, well, the slaves are, you know, we go, whoa, the S word, don't use that word. I don't like, what do you want me to call? I don't know, but don't say slaves. She goes, prisoners with jobs. And he goes, yeah, I like that. That's better. Okay. So I'm going, and this is the kind of thing you don't get in Star Wars, which is Disney, but Marvel, you do all these little, you know, Winter Soldier and Civil War, all this Captain America, little phrases like prisoners with jobs. That's how they, and that little stuff, I go, yeah, whoever got that in there, that's good. Because what, that's what we are. We're just a bunch of prisoners. We're a police state. With jobs, well, that have to, we're working for them, and that's what involuntary servitude meant. You were forced into third-party contracts. You had to pay some special interest money, and that's what Obamacare is.
Yeah, well, it's like voluntary compliance, right? Same thing. So, so with that, I want to backtrack with what you're saying. You're asking about Trump's role with it. Yeah, the first thing was just to maim it. It's sort of like you cut a major artery and you let this thing bleed out. As Newt Gingrich famously said, you know, back in the day about letting Medicare, you know, wither on the vine, if you remember that famous quote. And so I think that's what he's doing. Trump knows, with the art of the deal, that the other side, meaning the American people, Democrats, Republicans, whomever, will be forced back to the table. So he already knows that this is on its last legs. He maimed it by getting rid of the individual mandate and having that ruled against, which is what we're talking about. Once that's done, he doesn't have to do anything else. He can, he's taking on the establishment, he's doing North Korea, he's doing all, you know, he's fighting the media, whatever he's doing. But he doesn't have to get involved. And personally, and by the way, I understand your point about the Alchquidic comment. It seems like that's what I was bringing up, and maybe a little bit too much. But from the media's perspective, they keep wanting Trump to get his hands dirty in this healthcare debate, so then they can say when it doesn't work, it's Trump's fault. Trump's brilliant by not getting involved. He's not trying to propose a solution. There's not an easy solution. The solution is the free market.
No, it's Congress. He keeps going to Congress. You want it? I'll sign where you come up with something decent that doesn't suck, you wimps.
You guys come up with it. You guys promised it for all those years. I'm the one that got you the ability to do it, and you can't figure it out. So that's going to come back to bite you in the ass in midterms, which is what I keep bringing that up. I know you don't care, but that's a significant part of Obamacare, of the Republicans couldn't. They couldn't match the challenge that they claimed. No surprise, of course. But anyway, he's just going to allow that to just deflate. And ultimately, the other side will cry to him, assuming he's there for another 6 years, which I think he will, hopefully. But anyway, that's the strategy, not to get involved, not to propose something, because all they're going to do is rip it apart. So just let the Republicans do it and wait for them to be, you know, whimpering back to the table. Then he will have the leverage in this situation. That's what he's doing. So I understand you're asking about the details, and I guess it's interesting, Ernie. You know, myself being involved in healthcare, and I speak at the business class at the medical school and others. I was very involved.
Yeah, business at medical school.
Yeah, really. I was involved with the Obamacare debate, trying to get rid of it or not to have it pass. I was very active during those years running up. But the funny thing is, since Trump got in, and when the Republicans nixed it for political reasons, I just lost interest in it. To me, it just doesn't matter. The details don't matter, because once you got rid of the individual mandate, and you and I and most of this audience knows the economy is on its last legs, and all the reasons I mentioned, you know, the housing market, people can't sell their homes for health care, all of these problems that are racking up, it's just a matter of time. Let it collapse under its own weight and start from scratch with the people who are paying the taxes. Which is interesting, because it's the baby boomers who are all now going to need the money, but they're not contributing into it. So we'll see if the baby boomers are able to be mature enough and step up to the plate, or they're going to be so selfish that they're going to outvote, you know, the taxpayers and throw this whole bill and confiscate our wages, garnish our wages in order to pay for their health care they claim that they're owed. We will see where that leads. But
they're so
anyway,
selfish.
Yeah, that's healthcare. I may be winding it down a bit, speaking of which, I have a patient coming up soon. But it's been, I know, like I said, I'll have to take a chill pill here. It should be an interesting day to hear the media try to unravel all of this, going with North Korea, But ultimately, it's a huge feather in his cap and a sucker punch to the establishment in the narrative that Trump is unfit, that he can't figure this out. Remember, we're going to have war with North Korea, two bully dictators. And yet it was the antithesis. And you're seeing, I think, the average American who's been lied to this entire time by the establishment to demonize someone who represents outside the system, it's backfiring. And no better example than Dennis Rodman, black man, sitting there with a MAGA hat with Bitcoin, with a pot coin. Ernie, it was funny because they have always Ernie on CNN. They had all these commentators on, political commentators, and Lindsey Graham and experts on North Korea from the Hoover Institute. And then they had to get another guy in to comment on cryptocurrency to explain his shirt. On the same panel.
Oh, this is it's a death of a billion cuts and Bilderberg. We need to talk about when you next time you come on. Get your ass in studio, damn it!
All right.
It's schedule. Oh, that's another thing. I'm going to be gone for a while. I'm going to be next few weeks. Half of that time I'll be gone. But I'm taking a remote and doing some remote stuff. But there's opportunity for Frank come in microphone.
We shall say. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Trump.
All right.
Well, look, I will talk to you. Thank you very much for the invite with that. I still like to join you there, but I'm not sure if I can get away. Family time here. Do you think that the conversation, do you think there's been much sucked away from the establishment wing of the Libertarian Party real quick? Because of the death, or not death, but the one of the Koch brothers stepping down between Trump kind of sucking.
No, they represent. They're just the machine. There's a machine behind them, just like there's a machine behind McCain. There's a machine behind it. It's just this thing. The only solution to any of this is decentralization down to the individual. The reason I'm going to the national convention, I just want to see what the attitude is, and because I know it's on both sides, which one's going to win out in the off-term
Ernie, a quick question, though. What is your sense? And I'm sure you understand. I mean, our community is split with this too. There's the Alex Jones type libertarians, and then there's the anarchy libertarians, and we're all identifying with it, thinking that the other side doesn't see the full picture, and that's what a healthy debate is. But I'm curious, how many libertarians are self-identified? Do you think are pro-Trump? I mean, when Nick was complaining about that, trying to get Trump people out.
How many
libertarians do you think they'll lose?
You have like antiwar.com, Justin Raimondo's, big Trump fan, the consternation of a bunch of guys. You had Walter Block, which is well known as a libertarian author, professor, that's all Austrianed up. And he, libertarians for Trump, he created that. And so there's a lot, I'm the voluntarist, revolutionary, Ron Paulish types are more, you're just all a bunch of liars and you're counting on these guys to do what they're supposed to do and we don't and we're going to take care of it ourselves. So it's just when you talk about the United States as a geographic, they look at a globe with all the gang colors, America's green and, Britain, is purple and you got all these different colors on a globe. It's just like the gang colors. And libertarians, the real libertarians, more into the kind of crypto space or the decentralized. That's what our first hour was about, is we're taking Freedom's Phoenix and going decentralized with the data server, blah, 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 blah. And they don't recognize borders or boundaries. So when you start talking about elections and who and Trump and Norton, they're going, the hell are you talking about? We have a meetup, that in South Korea, blah, 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 that's working on USB drives for freedom to North Korea. We have a 4chan of we're doing kind of bypassing it, doesn't matter, and suck it. And the mesh network of the satellite of we're all going to be outside of they're doing what? We got cryptocurrency and potcoin and stuff. So this is, I don't think the argument is being discussed on how much power. I'll end the show with what I think. This is a clip from the end of the first Matrix that explains from my perspective what's going to happen. I'm going to show them a world without you. How do they compete with that? There is none. Everybody's arguing over stupid stuff, and everybody's going, one, you're confusing me with somebody that cares. It doesn't matter. in my opinion. And the Libertarian National Party, we matter this time. Now it matters. We need to matter, and we're going to, you know, and I'm going, it doesn't matter.
Well, Ernie, I think you and I are on the same page, big picture. I think that the people that are trying to slash Trump libertarians out are missing much of this, because I think people like myself agree that we don't need anyone to rule us, that we can be, you know, rely on the individual. But you need, to me, the Trump movement is the half step to that means.
And I think you're right that that's how it's perceived by a lot of people. But it's always, you know, the Antichrist is going to be the guy coming in with the solutions, and then you know he's the bad guy. Yeah. That kind of crap. So yeah. I'm not for, you know, giving any more power. You know, this is another story on Freedom's Phoenix today. Let me see. It was McCain. He's going on, you know, of course, he's got to go out with the, you know, how much he can screw us before he leaves. And see, McCain's war powers update torches the Constitution. In November of 17, an alien John McCain said that he and Democrat Senator Rhode Island Jack Reed were working on a proposal to update the broad war powers Congress gave the commander-in-chief after the 9/11 terrorist attack. Are they going to give more or less power? You know, and even if they say it's less, it's going to be more on something else. I don't trust these guys for nothing. What happens when I get to the point that I don't care what they do? It doesn't matter what they do. They sit there yelling and screaming, waving their arms around, and Dennis Rodman go get the Nobel Peace Prize. So, I mean, you know, it just doesn't matter. It just does. But I like watching. It's entertainment, you know, but it's I just want to show people a world without them. And that's what's happening. That is just opinion. It's just public opinion, and the opinion is growing that, God, these guys suck. They're always going to suck. You're not going to fix it. So who'd I have on in the second hour just before you? I had, you know, William Benny from the NSA, you know, and then, of course, what's he doing? We got software. We're working in this group, and we're going to fix it in a country that uses this kind of security thing, and they won't be, you know, we have the ability to do security without it being consolidated for the man of God, blah, blah, blah. I'm going, so you're writing software, pinky swear these guys are going to use it right? I mean, man, you're still putting a lot of faith in this. Well, he's of a generation that the Constitution in America, this is G. Edward Griffin stuff, you know, going to Red Pill Expo guys and a lot of the other people who are, Alex Jones and all, we got to get back to the, you know, that piece of paper that prevents the government from doing all the stuff that it does. I'm like, what? You know, all right, fine. You know, I let them have their say, but I know that's not the solution. I know that's not the solution. There isn't going to be, and if there is one, even a itty bitty little baby country that starts to come out, and where do you go? You go and invest where there's blood in the streets. Jim Rogers said, hell yeah, I'm going to put a bunch of money in North Korea, Venezuela, Moscow, Cuba. I mean, you know, you go where that, do I got to go to freaking North Korea to be free? Maybe. What happens when they put a seasteading thing off the coast of Peace Out and Trump gets his hotel? You know, these are the things they're trying to stop at Bilderberg. This is what they're worried about, this populace. That's why they got so secret this time. Luke Radowski is going on. There are like five real good independent journalists that, you know, is trusted by the community of whatever, go find out what's up. Man, they were like, if you even say a word other than no comment, you don't get to go again. So that's what the word was. Then you have the governor of Colorado, a Democrat that there's, you know, hoping is going to be the Trump killer in 2020 or something. What does he got to do? Got to go to Bilderberg. You know, so he's there in his face. Yeah, what are you doing here? Your constituent might want to know what you're doing here. Ambush and interview. Why are you doing here? What are you doing? What are they doing here? Why are you here running? You're running. No comment, no comment, no comment. Well, this is how these guys are selected. And I'm going, why would I? I want a world where it doesn't matter. I don't care.
All right, Ernie, I have to get going. I have to finish writing for my patient. Maybe I'll wear my Make America Great hat when I'm in my my office today. We'll see.
At least. All right. Peace, all brother. Right. I'm glad that, you know, we got, well, this is my opinion on the whole thing.
All right. Thanks, Ernie.
Bye, peace.
I know you're out there. Bye. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.